This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
You know, over time, changes started to happen. So it was consistency. Just keep doing it, and trying something else, and trying something else. We didn't do it all at once. We did the alcohol first. Then we started, you know, looking at plant-based food. Then I re-trained as a natural vegan chef. So there was lots of little elements to it.
It's the first on the podcast this week for Over the Influence. We've had brothers, we've had fathers and sons, mothers and daughters for the first time. This week we have got sisters, Sharon and Loretta, known as the Gavin sisters. Oh my word, there's so much to talk about. We cover, well, just about everything. I'll stop talking, you keep listening. Let's get into this week's episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Becky, and I was a typical grey area drinker. I'd managed to do several stints of alcohol-free life, but would regularly falter around the three-month mark. This time, I joined the fabulous OTI community, and it was just what I needed. The Zooms were a game-changer for me, connecting with people who relate and support you through the struggles, but who also really understand and celebrate the importance and the significance of the mini-wins and the milestones. OTI is full of amazing people. I'm just approaching 7 months alcohol-free, and I felt absolutely fantastic.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's fab to have you listening. If maybe you are finding us for the first time and you don't have a clue who we are, a quick reintroduction, or if you're listening for the first time, it's an introduction. Hello, my name's Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This September, this year, I will be 7 years alcohol-free. It's ace. It's been life-changing. We started this podcast 5 years ago. We started the community 4 years ago. Last year, I wrote a book about not drinking. It's just, it's bonkers. It's crackers. If you'd have told me any of this would have been happening like 7+ years ago, I would have literally laughed in your face. Stopped drinking at the age of 44. It was only ever going to be a break. I drank too much, too quickly, far too often. And life is just so much better. Now, alcohol is not at the centre of it. Cannot wait to get into today's chat. But before we do, Ben, how are you doing? Hello.
Hi. Yeah, Ben, 36, live in Liverpool. It feels like a very numerical intro today, Shaz. So I'm going to carry on the numerical
do
theme.
It.
You know, this is episode 231.
That's a lot.
Of Over
That's
the
a
Influence.
Lot of wanging on.
Yeah, it's a lot of wanging on. Episode 209 of series 3, since we started series 3 and went, oh, we're going to do this weekly now rather than series. Episode 209 seems to be like, you know, we've been downloaded nearly 1.5 million times.
That's a bit
across
ridiculous.
The globe, this podcast.
We started out, we had two listeners. It was my mum and your dad.
Yeah, it was. Dad listened twice. That was really good. But no, I haven't looked at the numbers for a long time. But isn't that nuts? We're coming up to 1.5. Honestly, when we started this, we really didn't think that anyone would listen, did
no.
we? Because who chooses to remove alcohol? Well, I did. I did after, well, I say I didn't intend to, like you, Shaz. I did a few months off. I was having a break for a few months. But I got to 3 months and felt great. So I said, right, I'm going to extend it. I'm going to do 6. Got to 6 and thought, wouldn't it be cool to say I had a whole year without drinking alcohol? So I committed to 12 months, and it was on day 366 for me that I looked at the year and what I'd achieved and how I felt and thought, this is a good choice for me. I'm going to be a permanently alcohol-free person. And that was back in 2020. So yes, this summer I'll be five years alcohol-free.
5 years,
yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
Flown by.
Who'd have thunk it?
Flown by. I feel thoroughly outnumbered today on this podcast. I'm going to pass back to you, Sharon, for the big introduction for our guests.
Guests
today.
Yes. And yeah, what's worse than having one Sharon in your ear on this podcast? You've got two today, Ben, so you're going to have to get used to that as well. So, right, let's do the big intro. On this podcast over the years, we have had a father and son episode, which was brilliant. Not too long ago, back end of last year, we had the alcohol-free brothers.
The brothers.
Who were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we did.
We've had mother and daughter. I was one of those. Mm. We've had two mother and daughter episodes, actually. But I think this is the first time ever on Over the Influence we have had sisters joining us on the podcast. So we've got so much to talk about. It is the Gavin sisters, it's Sharon and it's Loretta. Welcome both to Over the Influence. How are you doing?
We are great. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us on. We're really looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, and it's great just hearing, just even in your intro, like what a difference it makes from just stopping drinking and looking at your life. And, you know, and even like we're 12 years in and I've never stopped being grateful that I don't drink. It doesn't even get boring. I just always go, even now we go, oh my God, can you imagine if we did this festival and drank? Oh my God, can you imagine if we had to get up this morning and we'd had a drink? So yeah, we feel exactly the same, like really grateful that we stopped it. Yeah.
You know what? That's so good to know because, you know, as we just mentioned, Ben's 5 years in this summer, other side of summer, I'll be 7 years in. And we talk to our community and we share on the podcast and I'm forever going, it never wears off.
Yeah.
That feeling on a Saturday morning, it never wears off. And I swear to God, some people think, oh, Sharon, just put a sock in it. You're still bleating on about how good it is. But you're both 12 years in. And Sharon, you said there that actually it doesn't wear off. No. So I'm really pleased to hear that.
Yeah, no. It really doesn't. I think you remember how painful those weekends are as well when you have drank. And I don't know. I mean, for the first year, we just sort of kept waking up going, oh my God, I've got peace in my heart. I wake up every day and I, you know, I just feel like happy or I feel good, you know.
It's quite interesting because I was listening to someone the other day and he was talking about giving up and how he gave up for a year. And within that year, he really wanted to want to give up. He never really wanted to give up. He did it, but he never really wanted it. And then he went back on it. And then eventually he did want it. And I just thought that was really interesting concept of deciding to give up. I think it's a really complex thing. And people give up, but underneath it, they're thinking, I can't wait for 6 months. I'm going to do 6 months, but then I can't wait to go back to my normal drinking or my normal life. So I feel blessed that I fell in love with not drinking and I wanted to not want drink.
I love that. Absolutely. Yeah, I say that a lot. I fell in love with sobriety.
Yeah.
Didn't know I was going to, didn't know it was going to happen. Again, but you don't know until you know, do you?
No,
until you're on the other side of it all. Sharon, you said there that you're both 12 years alcohol free. Can we just get into like your relationship and how come you're both 12 years alcohol free? Is it something you did together? Who wants to go first and just give us a bit of history, I suppose?
I'll give you a little bit of history because it probably started with me being unwell. So I was, it's probably about 13 years ago now, I was diagnosed with quite a rare autoimmune disease that was a muscle disease, which basically I lost the strength in my muscles. So I got to a point where I couldn't really walk. I couldn't get up out of a chair. I couldn't brush my hair, couldn't hold my arm up. So it was very, very debilitating. And I was put on a lot of drugs to suppress my immune system. So, you know, when I took the drugs, I got a little bit better. And, you know, I went to the doctors and I think what the drugs did initially for me was that they gave me a little bit of hope because they started to work a bit. They didn't get me 100% better, but I started to get a little bit of energy back. I could get up out of a chair. I could walk a bit. And that led to a little bit of, you know, igniting my energy a bit and going, okay, well, I wonder what else I can do, you know. And so I sort of checked in with the doctors and I said, sort of, you know, is it all right if I drink wine, you know, a couple of glasses in the evening? And because it sort of says on the side effects, it's quite heavy on the liver, the medication I'm on. And they were like, look, there's no evidence. This was 13 years ago. And they were like, look, there's no evidence that anything you really do with your lifestyle is going to impact the disease. You've got this for life. You just need to get on with it. We've got you some suppression drugs that will help. So I was like, okay. I mean, I wanted them to say it's fine to drink because I wanted to drink. Although I guess at that stage, I also did have a little boy. I had a newborn when I was six. So, you know, going for the bottle of wine became less of an appeal because I was just so tired. And anyway, as I started to get a bit better, I then started to look at lifestyle factors, like what could I do? And I think number one, I was like, I can't like have a newborn baby. I left my husband as well at the same time. So I was getting divorced. I was moving in with my sister, who was a single mum at the time as well, and had a 3-year-old. I can't do all this stuff and drink. I kind of knew that. And I thought, okay, whatever changes I need to make, I'll make. But the first thing I need to do is just to stop drinking. And we were also preparing an Edinburgh show because we were a comedy double act. And Loretta said to me, look, we can't go to, you're not going to cope like doing gigs, a baby, not having your full health.
An autoimmune disease. It's just not going to work. We are going to be dead by the end of it.
So I was like, okay, well, let's not drink for the month of Edinburgh. Now, to put this in context, not drinking while you're gigging in Edinburgh doing a month's show is sort of unheard of. You know, you get on stage, you do your gig, you kind of, you know, hopefully it's gone well. So you're on a bit of a high.
Well, you're either drinking because it's gone brilliantly or you're drinking to console yourself because you bombed.
Yeah.
So either way, you're drinking. And yeah, you come back and you're like, my life is, I'm just so depressed. I don't know why. I hate my life. I hate me. I don't understand.
It must be because it's over. It's because it's over. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, it's the high of doing it. It must be because we're not in Edinburgh anymore.
I'm not in the bubble anymore. You know, I thought this was going to be, they were going to commission my next series and it hasn't happened. And what am I going to do now? And then you take a step back and you go, okay, I've been absolutely caning it for a month. Like, I feel like death. Like energy wise. So we did that month together, didn't we?
So it wasn't like we said, we're going to give up alcohol.
No.
We never said that. We said, let's give it up for the month. And we came back. Then as life continued, obviously Sharon was really sick. I was looking after Sharon. I was looking after two little children. And I said, I cannot wake up with red wine lips rocking in a corner. I just can't. I need to give myself the best chance I can possibly give myself in order to cope. We were both single mums. We were both exhausted. So I said, the only gift I can give myself is not drink. And it just went on and on and on and on. And we were like, the more we did it, the more we researched it, the more I kind of Googled celebrities. I'm like, oh, Catherine Tate doesn't drink. And oh, yes, they've just given up. And I just became addicted to looking at people that didn't drink, but also looking at other parts of health and well-being. And we always say it was the biggest needle mover in every other decision we made after that. That one decision literally changed everything.
It's the foundation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the foundation of so much more. And we talk about that all the time here, that, you know, it's corny as hell, but, that giving up alcohol is just the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. And people, we talk about that's the kind of foundation. And everyone has that foundation when you remove alcohol. And people build different things on top of that foundation, you know, because we're all different and unique and special. But without that foundation, then all these great things. Because it's an interesting one, though, isn't it? Because we know that. You know, we know that now, however many years we all are into this. But the kind of societal wisdom, I suppose, is, oh, God, that sounds tough. Mm. You know, that's a reason to drink. You know, you're looking after Loretta, you know, your sister, two kids. That's the moment where you go, get me the wine, isn't it? Not remove the wine.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And I think there needs to be a lot more education around alcohol. Because even we run... retreats.
Sorry, I'm just going to get the dog. Sorry.
We love dogs on Over the Influence. It's absolutely
fine. We don't mind
dogs.
Okay.
My Dolly will be barking. She's outside. Scratching at the door before
too long. So we run retreats and they're alcohol free. And most people have never spent a weekend without alcohol. And it's really interesting watching people just connect. And the laughter that we hear from the rooms every weekend is unbelievable. And people think, you know, in that glass of wine is fun. What they don't realize, it actually, alcohol doesn't give you endorphins. It's actually a suppressant. And all it does is slightly sedate you. But because you're in communities when you drink, because you're surrounded with other people and they make you laugh, you actually think it's the wine that's making this happen. And it's not. It's the connections. And we see it every time at the weekend. But we're so socially conditioned to think that it's that beer that's making us all have a great time. And I think that is the education piece, is realizing that alcohol is actually doing nothing. It's just sedating you.
So and all it does as well is, like, even if you watch children, you know, when they first turn up at a party, they're a little bit shy. You know, it takes them a little while.
Yeah.
Now, after, you know, 10 minutes, they warm up and then they're running around. And it's not just, oh, it's the sugar. It's not. They just find their way. They connect and then they're having a great time. And it's the same as adults. So when you all go out for dinner, if you were to be alcohol free and it was a societal norm to be alcohol free and you go out for dinner, you know, it might all start off a little bit, oh, how's your week been, blah, blah. By the end of the evening, completely alcohol free, it is raucous, you know, and you haven't had, we run a retreat in Portugal and it's a 5-night retreat. And on the last night, they'd all spent some time together, all connecting. Everybody was standing up, doing speeches, impromptu songs were coming out. Someone got the guitar out. I mean, it wasn't hippie. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, let's sit around the fire. It was amazing. And I was filming this and I was like, if only you get there, you get there anyway. You know, it's just that the alcohol is such, I don't know. It's just such an illusion. It really is that we've all been fed. And not only does it make you sick. I mean, you know, I used to look at a glass of wine and go, you know, I went to Napa Valley with my ex-husband. I loved wine and the ritual and the tasting. But I generally look at a glass of red wine now and I see anxiety in a cup. And that's basically what it is. But it's taken me a little while to get there, you know.
So as sisters, you have many strings to your bow. We'll go through the email that you sent us kind of introducing you and what you do a bit more, because there's a lot of different stuff that you guys do, which is fabulous. I love that you guys, I said this before we started recording, I love that you know, it is, you finish each other's sandwiches. It really is like, you know, you're jumping in and it's great. I want to ask about the comedy, and I want to ask, you know, you guys, comedy double act, done Edinburgh, etc. Why does society find alcohol and in particular drunken behaviour so funny?
Why do they find it? Because it's ridiculous and it is funny. Is that what you mean? Like,
for example, I used to go on nights out in Birmingham, where I'm from originally, and get get blackout drunk. I'm a grown man walking around the city centre, not in control of what I'm saying, what I'm doing, but, oh, it's so funny. I can't remember what happened last night. Oh, mate, I remember that bit where you pulled your trousers down and did. Oh, that's so funny. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, because essentially alcohol is a drug, you know, and, you know, like any drug, you know, it can make you do funny things at the time. Like getting stoned is funny. Do you know what I mean? Because you all start communicating on a different level. You start to misinterpret. We're not saying that there is no humour in getting drunk. You probably do have quite a good time and you probably have, you know, for that 2 hours, perhaps you have a better time than the people that are not drinking, or so-called what you think is a better time, because you're drunk and you're perceiving things in a funnier way. Your brain is working in a different type of way. But it's the price that you pay for that is just simply not worth it. So it's an equation, isn't it? It's like 3 hours of hedonistic happiness compared to eudaimonic happiness. So hedonistic is that seeking pleasure, seeking fun, more. That is you, and you do, there's no doubt about it. You do get a bit of joy from doing that. There is pleasure to be had, but the eudaimonic happiness is the slow burn. It's the just waking up and feeling good. It's the connection with someone in a coffee shop. It's the
purpose. It's the meeting. Purpose.
It's the feeling good about who you are and what you do. So that they're both types of happiness, but they're just very different. That's all it is. It's just very different.
And I think it's understanding what that is. I also think alcohol is it helps you, it loosens you up, you know. And yeah. I see a lot of people, and I think this is probably the danger zone, that once they've had a glass, that they're much more outgoing and they're much more vibrant. They feel more relaxed, you know, and they think, oh, alcohol is giving me that. It's not, it's helping, but that's who they could be if they just spent a bit more time and if they worked on themselves. Oh, this sounds really deep and wanky,
but you know what I mean. Yeah,
it is part of you. It just would take a bit of work for you to get there, you know, to get that confidence.
Like I've seen those same people that you're talking about, I've seen them like when they're in flow or when they're happy or when they're, and they don't need the drink to get there. That is who they are anyway. It just takes a bit longer. And maybe you've got a bit of social anxiety and that helps to curb all that. So it's a drug that is doing something. It's definitely doing something, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a big price to pay. That's my view on it.
I want to know how removing alcohol has impacted you both as a comedy double act. Do you think you're funnier? Are you more confident? Braver? I don't know. Because anybody that I speak to, so myself and Ben both work in radio. We both work for the BBC.
Yeah.
And I get so excited when I get to speak to stand-up comedians. It's just...
We've had Russell Hicks on the podcast, haven't we?
Yes.
He's been out for a really long time, yeah.
Well, absolutely brilliant. And the whole...
He's so funny.
The thought of just standing there, with a mic in front of a room, you don't know how it's going to go. The pressures are there anyway. And so what's that like now, doing that for you two as performers without the booze?
Well, we actually do less of it now, if we're being really honest. We never drank when we performed anyway, ever.
Fair dues then.
And absolutely could not do that. Yeah.
No. And also our stuff wasn't the kind of laddie kind of stand-up. It was more character-driven, had a narrative.
Yeah.
You know,
it was much more subtle and it was really
observational humour. It wasn't your kind of... If lads out on a night out came and seen us, they'd absolutely hate us. So, yeah, no.
We were never going to do jonglers. You know, we were character-driven comedy, really.
With you.
Yeah, fair dues. I think, not having the drink, I think it's just in terms of our lives, just not having drink in our life has changed our lives dramatically, because as we've discussed, we thought it was giving us something. We thought it was giving us a release. We thought it was, because people drink when they're stressed, they drink when they're sad, they drink when they're happy, they drink when they're bored, all those things people drink. And when you take it away, and this is one thing I used to say, because I used to be like, if I was really hungover, right, I'd be like, oh, don't think about those problems. It's because you're hungover. And I think when you take, and you can put it down to that, and it does make the anxiety a lot higher. But when you take drink away, it gives you massive clarity, because sometimes you are worried about stuff, but you're generally worried about it because it's a fear or a worry, not because you're hungover. So it gives you massive clarity. So taking drink out of our lives, I think you can see what the issues are and what they're not,
We did this year, create a show. It was the Gavin Sisters Wellness Show, and basically we combined a wellness talk, our story, with sketches. So we do a sketch on sober dating, and we do wellness influencers, those real that kind of thing. And we're going to do it this year at Carfest. It's a bit of a weird combo, because it's giving sort of advice, but also
people don't quite know what it is. So we would talk about, as I said, we were performing it at Chris Evans' Carfest this year, and we would talk
because
about...
Because he's alcohol-free now, isn't he, Chris Evans?
Yeah,
he's done well over a year now.
Andy Ramage has been working with him, hasn't he?
Yeah. So, and it's a narrative about, being in a very unhappy marriage, getting out of it, Loretta, being left when she was pregnant, and then, us... joining our lives together, and then finding a way for me to kind of get better and become symptom free from my disease. And because the wellness world, there are quite a lot of in there, do you know what I mean? So and it takes itself really seriously, and
it's a bit yummy mummy, a bit kind of namaste, my truth is blue like, changed my life. It's not the Botox and fillers and the whatever else they're doing, it's the blueberries.
It's like my morning routine. It's like I get up and I journal and I meditate and I do this and I do that, and then I juice and then I stretch and then I pump weights. I mean, you'd need a full-time job to fit in this whole routine. So we take the piss out of the wellness world while also really sharing that actually it's the best thing we ever did was to clean up our lives. So it's a bit of a mix. The comedy's still there.
You know what? Can I ask you, Loretta? I'm just reading the website at the moment, and it's the About Us, Our Story section. And I love this line, Sharon, where you were, through a lot of research, we talked about this, I found people who made dramatic progress with autoimmune disease by making major lifestyle changes. They went plant-based, gave up alcohol, cut out processed foods. That's something that I've been reading more about, obviously, with ultra-processed people. It was massive last year, wasn't it, Chris Van Tulleken? Haven't quite geared myself up for it yet, but it's on the list. Feeling completely overwhelmed by the changes I knew I needed to make, I turned to my sister Loretta and said, if I'm going to have to become a miserable teetotal vegan, then you have to do it too. I'm not doing this alone. I mean, Loretta, obviously, it was very serious, the situation, that time that Sharon was in. But did you have a second thought about it? Did you think, well, hang on a sec, you know, do I have to become a miserable teetotaler vegan just because Sharon wants me to?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to say, you know, people say, well, you were so good to do that. Well, you know, I'm such a, like, I don't know. But I did it as much for me as I did it for Sharon. One, we're really, really close. To see your sister the way she was, it was horrific. She was basically in a wheelchair. She was covered head to toe in a rash, and I needed her back. I needed her back because she had a one-year-old, I had a three-year-old, we were on our own, and I was like, I can't cope by myself, so I need to get her back. So I was like, I need my energy as well, so this might be really good for me. And I was very much like, okay, if we're going to do this, let's make it the best thing we've ever done. We've got to throw everything at it. And we did. We threw ourselves into it. And I don't want to, for listeners, I don't want to sugarcoat it, because I think it's really easy to give false hope and say to people, oh, you know, we just changed our diet and all of a sudden Sharon was better. It wasn't like that. It took time. It took effort. It took consistency. There were times when Sharon was like, literally, I've not eaten cheese for 6 weeks and it's still not working. I'm going to give it all up. You know, we literally kept going and we kept reading and we kept finding people. And, you know, over time, changes started to happen. So it was consistency. Just keep doing it and trying something else. We didn't do it all at once. We did the alcohol first. Then we started, you know, looking at plant-based food. Then I retrained as a natural vegan chef. So there was lots of little elements to it.
I mean, even if you go back to the first step, which was the alcohol, Loretta desperately wanted to stop the alcohol as much as I did.
Oh, yeah. I remember getting pregnant going, I'm so glad I'm pregnant because now I won't drink.
Yeah,
And
I think this drinking is probably quite interesting to talk about. And I know Andy Ramage talks about this middle lane drinker. Like, Loretta and I were never alcoholics, whatever you define that as. But I would love a couple of glasses of wine every single night and then a bit at the weekend. So we would share, or I would share with my ex-husband, a bottle of wine every night. And I thought that was normal. It's not normal. It's way too much alcohol and you have a dependency. By the time I got to 6 o'clock, I was craving a glass of wine. I think that's quite normal for a lot of people now. Now, I still had a high functioning life. I was drinking 2.5 glasses of wine a night. I was never a blackout person, which I think it's easier to define that, oh, actually, I've got a bit of a problem here. But when you're someone that just really enjoys drinking, and I drank a couple of glasses of wine every night, it's hard.
And then maybe more at the weekend. And then
maybe more at the weekend.
Yeah.
But I was never a kind of, I can't stop drinking forever. You know what I mean?
No.
I would feel a bit sick and go, I think, I've had enough. Do you know what I mean? But when you're that type of drinker, it's really hard to know that actually this is really destructive and unhealthy. But I
think it's really easy to kid yourself as well.
Yeah.
And go, it's fine.
I'd get up in the morning and I'd be like, feel a bit crap, because you're still a little bit hungover from that amount of drink. You are hungover, actually. But you sort of get up, and because I was quite into exercise, I'd go running or get on my bike, and then I'd sort of lift the fog and I'd feel okay. And then I'd do the whole thing over again. And then I'd go get to Tuesday and be like, I'm not going to drink Thursday, Friday now. And then I would.
Yeah.
So that was my relationship with alcohol.
You see, I kid myself in a different way. And I think it's why it annoys me so much, this kind of black and white, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, you know, problem drinker, normal drinker. It's not that,
not
is
helpful.
It? It's so many shades of grey, because for me, I didn't drink every day. And I didn't think about drinking every day. But when I'd go out, I was a binge drinker.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'd go out and I'd go out for a couple of pints. And then a couple of pints would turn into six, would turn into, let's get the tequila. Like, and then, you know, I wouldn't drink again till the next weekend.
But I
overdid it so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you go, but people who've got a drinking problem drink every day.
Or they drink in the morning.
I was a problematic drinker. Was I a problematic drinker? Because my drinking created problems for me.
Yeah.
And it's that World Health Organization thing of, you know, yes, you've got, it's not black and white, it's hazardous, it's, what is it? We've talked about this, but who was it? Mandy Manners, he told us about this, Shaz.
I think it was.
It's hazardous drinking, like my drinking was definitely hazardous. Hazardous something dependent. Or no, harmful, hazardous.
That was it.
Dependent drinking. And that's what the World Health Organization talk about. It's not addicted, not addicted. It's not black and white.
Yeah.
You know, it's the shades of grey, because it is different for everyone, isn't it? And if it's problematic, in whatever way it's problematic, then you're going to be better off without it.
Yeah.
Why did you give up, Sharon? Sorry, what was your...
Oh, no, you're more than welcome. No, please ask away. It's not a problem because...
It's very on brand for this podcast to ask that question.
Yeah. Because when people say to me, why did you stop? My stock answer for most people these days is because I drank too much, too quickly, too often. But like you were just talking about there, Sharon, it was so insipid... And it was such a slow process where I drunk for years, not every day, you know, not by a long stretch. You know, we talk about going back to your teenage years and then at uni, 20s, 30s. But my drinking in my 40s, that's when it changed from sort of late 30s, 40 onwards. And I got to the point where I thought, hang on a minute, when did this amount per night become normal? And I don't really share how much I drank, you know, towards the end in terms of, you know, when I was stopping, because it's about it being too much for you.
Yeah.
So if somebody was to listen to this pod and go, well, I don't drink as much as Shazza off the podcast, I'm fine. Who says it's not too much? You know what I mean? It's too much for you. And again, it comes back to what Benny's saying there about this whole grey area. But myself and Ben... probably 99% of the guests on this podcast and the majority, if not all, the people in our community never set out to stop drinking. You know, like you said earlier, Loretta, I fell in love with sobriety. I didn't want to be sober. I didn't even know what it meant. But I just took a break. And it was during that break, an extended break, where the fog did begin to lift. And I thought, oh my God, is this what it's supposed to feel like every morning?
Yeah.
Like, this is this. Oh my God, I did not know this. And as you were saying there, Sharon, a large glass of wine, two large glasses of wine, that puts you into a fog the next day, whether you admit it or not. It can't not. It's what it does to you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I look back to that slap bang in the middle of my 40s, taking that break. It's led me to where I am now. And I wouldn't change it for the world because so much good stuff has happened.
Yeah.
And I never, ever want to go back for that. So never intended to stop drinking. That was a really long-winded answer.
No, so, it's great. It's interesting. I think when you don't drink, you all kind of, I'm always curious about it. I'm always, oh, why did you stop? You know, because I love talking about it as well. And we have lots of people on our retreat as well, get to their 40s, especially female, and just go, I just can't drink anymore. It's just like doing me in, you know. And I had one recently and she came on our retreat and she was a GP and she'd just taken a break, a bit like we were just saying, just drinking a bit too much every night. You know, we're not talking about a bottle of vodka a night. We're just talking a couple of glasses. But again, that fog in the morning and she just said, you know, I've taken a break for the last sort of 6 months and I feel really good, but I've got a holiday coming up. And she was on our retreat and she was just about to go on this holiday. And I was
with her family.
With her family, yeah.
Right.
And, okay. I was like, I said, really try and keep it up. Just try and keep it up. Just get through the holiday. Like, you'll be so pleased. Just try and keep this momentum up. And obviously, Loretta and I, throughout the weekend, we're always talking about how we love not drinking. I mean, sometimes I have to go, look, sorry, guys, this isn't AA, but we do love not drinking. because I feel like not everyone wants to hear it, you know. But anyway, she sent me this really lovely email going, oh my God, I did not drink on holiday. I had the best holiday. I woke up every day. I did yoga. I saw the sunrise. I'm so great. I mean, she was just so grateful that she got through those holidays. And I think it's those milestones, isn't it? How can I not drink on holiday? How can I not drink on a hen do? How can I not drink at a wedding? It's all these things. When you do them, it's so liberating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, completely. But you don't, again, you know, so much of sobriety, I think it's hindsight, isn't it? And it's learning, and you don't know it until you're actually doing it. If somebody had written me a plan or looked into a crystal ball and have explained to me what my life would be like, you know, into my 50s compared to what it was like in my 40s, I would not have believed them.
Yeah.
I'd have gone, you're talking absolute cack. No, alcohol is everything. Alcohol is the be all and end all. Alcohol is at the centre of fun and holidays and all the rest of it. It's tosh.
Yeah.
But until you give yourself that chance, you know, and we bang on about it, you know, it's life changing. It's a journey. It's an adventure. And it's all those wanky words, but it's true.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, look, if it was that good drinking, I'd have gone back.
Yeah.
You know, oh, isn't it great a shame? Is it a shame Sharon can't drink? I'm like, no, you don't get it. This is a choice.
Yeah.
This is a choice now because it is just another way of living. And it's,
And I think we're banging on about it here, but I think you learn not to bang on about it to people that don't want to hear it. And what I find really interesting is that
you just show up how you show up, and then people ask you questions.
Yeah.
And that's when I share. I never ever share without people asking, because no one hates a smug teetotal.
There's nothing worse.
There's nothing worse. And you know, that kind of feel like you're looking down at them, or that you're judging them, or any of those kind of things.
Well, the argument we get a lot of, I don't know if you find this, guys, but if you, when you tell someone you don't drink, if it comes up, they then start telling you their drinking schedule. And you're like, I don't care. They'll be like, well, on a Monday, I never drink. And on a Tuesday, you know, only if it's been a, and then on a Thursday. And I'm like,
I don't care.
You don't have to do confession to me, but it's that kind of, I think people feel that you're judging them just because you said you don't drink. Although saying that, things are changing. I mean, I don't know how old you are, Ben, but, you know, Loretta and I'm 50, Loretta's 52 or whatever.
53.
Sorry.
I'm happy with 52.
you know, we were brought up in a very hedonistic, our generation was very hedonistic.
Yeah, same age as me. Yeah. 51.
Yeah.
And,
so, yeah.
You know,
we didn't have, you know, coffee culture.
We didn't even have a coffee shop to go to. It was cider down the parade. So I think, you know, things are changing in the new generation. There's been stats on it. The massive, like, non-drinkers between 16 and 25. So things are changing. And we were just talking about, you know, alcohol and what's enough and what's not enough and what's safe. You know, the evidence now is no amount of alcohol is safe. So whether you drink, you know, half a glass or five glasses a night, it's carcinogenic as well, you know. So education is coming in about it.
Mm. And I think it is changing as well. And you've seen this, Ben, haven't you, over the last five years of not drinking? I've seen it myself since 2018, since I stopped. It's, you know, people's attitude. Not just people's attitudes, you know, you can go out now, you can get decent AF options and things like that. But I think, you know, like you say, the discussions are becoming, I think, more frequent, more honest. And as you were saying there, Loretta, you know, somebody comes and says, can I just have a chat about the whole not drinking thing?
Yeah.
What's it like? You know, do you mind me asking why you stopped? If someone's going to give me stick for it and call me a boring teetotaler who doesn't, you know, I don't trust people that don't drink, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not interested. Yeah. But if you want to talk about it and, you know, talk about lifestyle options and all the rest of it, I do think that those conversations are happening more and people are far more receptive to it than they were.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I did drink, I was fascinated with non-drinkers. So if I met a non-drinker, I'd be like, how did you do it? What did you do? When did you do it? And I'd ask them tons of questions. But in the same breath, I remember working with someone who didn't drink.
He was a director.
Yeah. And I remember actually being quite like a bit of a bully. Like, why don't you drink?
Control freak.
What's wrong with you? Have you got control issues? And I remember being like that. And it must have been something about
It's a mirror. It's a mirror going, look how much you're drinking.
Yeah, because it's more about you, isn't it, Loretta? Not that person.
Yeah.
Luckily, we're not bullying anyone anymore.
No, I've stopped the bullying.
Good.
Have you ever thought about what the funniest response would be for someone saying, as, you know, a comedy double act, the funniest response that someone can give when someone goes, oh, just have one, or not funny on cue. That's what we keep telling everyone as well.
Just be funny.
We're just not funny, full stop.
Vanessa Feltz once did that to me. She was like, we were coming in to support a show and I was on a radio show and she was like, in the break, she was like, be funny, girls. We just do something funny. And I was like,
and we were like, every funny fibre of us just drifted away. And we were like,
it was like, the least funny.
And I think we said something.
No, I said really inappropriate. I came up with a really, that was actually in the show that I won't repeat now, but it was something really inappropriate, taking the piss out of people that worked in health food shops. But it was really dark and it wasn't for kind of radio. And I was so under pressure to be funny. And then literally, I think we were escorted out of the studio within 3 minutes.
The red lights were like bleeding. People phoning up, complaining.
It's probably, a version of me is coming in and going, dragging you out.
Yeah, or mortifying.
anyway.
I'm loving the sound of your retreats. They sound right up my street. So I'm going to be having a nose at that aunt website. At what point did you go from being sisters that drank to sisters that didn't to let's do retreats and get into the whole sort of, you know, health foods and whatever it is you do on your retreats? Just tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it started with going away with girlfriends. We used to go away with girlfriends and they would all get absolutely hammered and, you know, obviously have a really good time. And then me and Sharon would get up in the mornings and be out running and doing ginger shots. And
but we would do a lot of cooking over the weekend.
Because obviously, you know, we had to, we really threw ourselves into eating well. And by the end of the retreats, our girlfriends would be like, you need to help people, because whenever I hang out with you, I feel like I want to make changes in my life. So you need to try and do something where you teach people how to live better. So that kind of planted the seed. And obviously we're jobbing actors and comedians, and we were looking for something else, and we were thinking about starting a juice bar, and then the thought of being in a juice bar all
the
day.
A bit of a plan B. Yeah, you do. Yeah.
So we decided that we were going to set up a retreat, and we wanted to do a retreat for everyday people, because we'd been on a lot of retreats and a lot of them were amazing and they were lovely, but we found it a little bit holier than thou and a bit earnest and a bit hippy dippy and hugging trees and my truth is and all of that kind of
stuff. Namaste. And you can go, it was like as if all the retreats out there, you had to be spiritual to go on a retreat, you know, and outwardly spiritual. You know, you can be spiritual in your own way, but you know, you would go on these retreats, it's all namaste and all this. And we were just a bit like, we want to create a space where people can come, have amazing food, not drink, do some yoga, do some walking, do some hiking.
Do some meditation, do all those lovely things, but
without being,
but be normal, yeah. You know. And, you know, we found it a bit sort of spiritually competitive. You know, they were like, you know, who's the healthiest and who's the most spiritual and all of that kind of stuff. So we wanted to create something a bit normal for everyday people, that they don't feel intimidated. They can go there and learn some hacks and learn how to be healthy. So that's how that started. And it just, it was effortless, literally.
Yeah, we created one weekend. We have a property out in Suffolk, and we were like, we could just host them here. It's like a lovely barn that our family own as a bit of a holiday home. And we were like, we could just host them here. I mean, it was very nerve-wracking. Imagine like 10 strangers turning up to your house. We'd never done this before, but we knew enough. We'd been on enough retreats ourselves to kind of know what vibe, what environment we wanted to create, what we love doing. And I've got to say, from the moment we started those retreats 6 years ago, it has been effortless. It's been word of mouth. We've had so many picks in so much press, like from the Daily Telegraph to the Times, the Guardian. I mean, just every part. We've been so lucky. I cannot tell you. And they just sell out. So, and we love hosting them as well.
Yeah.
And we've never got bored, and we still love hosting them. And now we host some in Portugal as well. We do a 5-night in Portugal, which is just the best. We host the retreat. We have a house up the road as well. So I bring my team with me. We have such a laugh. It's all alcohol free. It's all good food. It's all good company. And it's just a brilliant job, you know? And yeah, so it's just been one of those things.
Brilliant. Sounds nice.
Not sure how this is going to go down, Sharon and Loretta, but we've known each other for about 45 minutes now, so I'm just going to go for it. I love the wellness but normal kind of vibe to it. Do you worry that you might be tipping over to wanky wellness with mushroom coffee? Just throwing it out there.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. I'm going to... Right, the fists are up now. I'm going to defend yourself. Yes. No, I know what you're saying. Right, so I'm going to give a bit of context.
This is on the website now. Funky Coffee, it's called.
Funky Coffee, yeah. My daughter named it. So it's a kind of play on fungi coffee.
Which is very clever.
Yeah. So it's... When Sharon was sick, the one thing she didn't want to give up was coffee. She did give it up and she hated it. Her life was never the same, because without her first cup of coffee, trust me,
No, I was miserable without it and I never got over it. Like with the drink, I was so grateful, so grateful. With the coffee, I just felt resentment. I was like, I really love coffee. I want to drink it, you know.
So we went on a mission to find the healthiest coffee we could, and we came up with mushroom coffee. Now, it is coffee, so it's triple certified organic Arabica coffee. So you've got coffee. It's not made of mushrooms.
It's not mushrooms that are pretending to be a coffee. It is a ground coffee.
Right.
And then mushrooms in it. And then it's infused with mushrooms, so it gives it a real health benefit. And what we're 100%, without turning into one of those wellness wankers, is we're absolutely into health hacks. So how do you do something every day and make it healthier? And drinking a cup of coffee every day is a really easy win. So every day you are boosting your coffee with a 7 mushroom blend with lion's mane and cordyceps and reishi. You can't taste them. It's delicious. And you don't get that kind of afternoon crash afterwards, or that kind of anxiety.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was my next question. What does it taste of? You know, I love mushrooms, but I like mushrooms in
coffee.
A dish with garlic.
Yeah.
And I love coffee.
I will send you guys a bag.
We'll send you a bag.
And we've infused it with a 4.5% of mushrooms. So we tested it all out. And once the mushrooms content started tipping over into the flavor of the coffee, we reduced the amount.
Okay.
So we've got like a 4.5%. So it gives it enough of a health kick, but it doesn't overpower the taste. So it actually just tastes like really good coffee.
I mean, the coffee, even if you didn't have the mushrooms, the coffee itself is a really good coffee.
Right. I'm looking forward to this. We're going to do a taste test on the premium pod.
Okay. We'll send you some.
Yeah.
Amazing. Mm. There's nothing you two don't do. And genuinely,
it's great. But
it's so good.
But it all makes sense. I love that. Like, and I love the story. I love, you know, my brothers are my best mates in the world. And, you know, I totally, Loretta, when you were talking earlier, like, I get that feeling completely. And actually, my brother Charlie is over a year alcohol-free himself now.
Oh, wow.
I'm so proud of him. Like, you know, it's great. He's a great dad. He's smashing life. And so I love that story. Do you feel like there is nothing that you guys couldn't do?
Well, do you know what makes me laugh? You're saying, because it reminds a friend of mine the other day said, like, that we've had some really good news recently, and yeah, things are going really well with our business and it's expanding. And, you know, but we get this a lot. And I don't know whether it's an insult or a compliment, but it's I'm glad things are starting to take off for you two, because you've really tried. You know, that's how I'm hearing it.
Maybe it's not meant to be received like that, but I'm exhausted.
Because you two are such go getters. You keep driving and driving. And I'm like, I think it's a compliment, but I don't know whether it's there. And it's a bit like, it's what I'm hearing from you is like, is there anything you don't do?
it was meant to be a compliment.
I know it is. I'm only giving you the backstory, but we do get stuff. They just don't. What are they doing now? Mushroom coffee. They just don't stop.
But you know what? It's it's fantastic. And it comes back to what Ben said before and what happened 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And who cares what you do?
Yeah.
Remove alcohol and you can do what the flipping heck you want. If you don't want to do anything, like literally anything in sobriety, great. But it happens, doesn't it? And stuff happens organically, and your life takes turns that you never thought would be on the cards. And genuinely, from both myself and Ben, when we said that is nothing that you can't do, it's a massive compliment.
Oh, thank you. I think we got to 50 as well, and we were like, you know, we've not even thought about pensions.
We haven't got a pension. We haven't thought this through.
You know,
we've been like gigging, and what are we doing?
We've been doing Edinburgh's, and and we were like, all of a sudden, we were like, okay, right, we got to stop now.
We got focused now. Yeah,
yeah. Well, we wish you all the luck with all your ventures. We can't
wait to
taste the mushroom coffee. You know, on paper sounds grim. I'm not going to lie, but we will. You've sold it to us. You really.
But we'll
have.
Try it. We're open.
We'll try it. Yeah. We look forward to.
You have
to
make it in a cafetière. I'll send it to you.
We've got one of them. Right. Quite posh up north.
Yeah.
No problem.
Shaz has got a sauna in her garden.
Oh, don't
have you?
We don't have time, Ben.
Yeah, her husband's a joiner and made a turned really? A garden shed into a sauna.
Do you know, they're so good for you. They're so good for you.
Nah, it stinks. I hate the flipping thing. I've got a weird phobia of, I think I watched a film when I was a teenager and it put me off for life. We are genuinely out of time.
Sorry,
then. Please,
okay,
can you
sorry,
stop?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Right, I'm trying to wrap this up.
Yeah, you're doing really well.
Sauna in and we're like, the sauna?
Don't. She's like, seriously. The electricity. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
We're going to wrap this up. Yeah. Community members need to jump on. We've got a Zoom with Over the Influence. Very quickly, before you go, if people want more information about the coffee, about your retreats, about your shows, about whatever it is that you've got going up next, where can they find the information?
Just go to our website. It's www. Do people say
no,
W?
You don't have to do that.
They don't say that anymore. That's very early 90s.
My daughter would kill me.
www.
It's Gavin Sisters.
.co.uk. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Can you take that bit out? So
no, leave it in.
Just clarify www.gavinsisters.co.uk.
And if you go on the interweb for the first time, it's www. Sharon and Loretta, it's been an absolute pleasure. The
pleasure.
Gavin Sisters,
thank you
so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thanks for having us, guys. Yeah, thank you.